Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I'm going to go with good morning. I don't totally feel it.
Oh, I was going to say, it is in fact before noon.
I don't like it.
Counts as
I'm not happy the offseason's here, Josh.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of it is like, the Senior Bowl practices start today.
You could just say morning. Hey, morning. Because it's not a good morning.
That gives off the connotation that I'm chipper and it's a good morning.
Yeah.
Because we're on radio, I can't just do like the little head nod where you're like, I can't do that. We're not on video.
But
that's how I feel.
All right. Well, I guess then we need to come up with a term that you're like, hey, like, nice to see you. Happy you're here. And it's the morning.
The sun rose.
Thrilled. It's a new dawn.
It's a maybe. Maybe. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Yesterday kind of felt like the, all right, get ready. The off season's here. Tie your shoes. Go to work.
My shoes are tied.
Find happiness. Today feels like the start of, all right, the offseason is here. We're expecting Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean to speak with the media at some point this week. We don't know definitively when. We'll be speaking with Sal Capaccio at 11 to talk locker cleanout yesterday. But we are there. We are now to the point where we're talking about free agency and the draft and offseason trades you need to make, what have you. And I found myself yesterday really at a point where, like, outside of like desperately wanting like a Myles Garrett, Max Crosby trade, purely for the vibes at a certain point, but also like definitively they need it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't really ready for this. I've spoken on it, Josh, the last 2 years. I kind of was at a point where I was ready for the Bills season end. You know, would it be just the bad vibes around it? The season itself just became such a grind, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted them to win the Super Bowl, but when they lost after about a day, I was like, you know what? I kind of needed it. I kind of needed a reset with this team.
And also, I feel like in those years when it's like, yeah, like you're there, but the vibes are off or whatever, you're like excited about, hey, you know, they can do this, they can do that. Let's go look at this player. Let's look at that player. What are they going to do in free agency? Who are they going to draft? Like, that was the exciting thing about those teams, whereas this one, it was like, yeah, everything's coming together at the right time. This is a year that had no expectations. Let's just not necessarily like, oh, we're playing with house money, enjoy the ride, but it kind of did feel like that for points of the season of like, hey, this is just a pleasant surprise. Let's keep going and see what happens. And ultimately, this is a week later than it was last year, so that, I guess, is a positive.
That feels so different for me.
But it doesn't feel like a positive.
It
like,
feels so different
like looking at a success standpoint, technically, this was a more successful season, but it still doesn't feel that way. It feels like either... It feels about the same. It doesn't feel less, obviously, but it feels about the same as it did last year where you're like, oh, here we are again, Kansas City.
I think
can't get past them. Like that's
for me, though, the last two years prior to this, it was just kind of like at a certain point, yeah, I thought they weren't going to win it. I felt they were going to win it this year.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's only a week later, but I hadn't already started to do draft prep or anything like that.
You're not doing draft prep in the last week of the season because you're just kind of like getting ready.
I kind of assumed we were going to have like a 2 week party leading up to the Super Bowl, then the Super Bowl. And then it was like, oh, well, the Senior Bowl, when did the Senior Bowl happen? Like, and we were going to kind of play catch up a little bit, but it was fine because they won the Super Bowl. Now, I don't know. Just for me, I'm not really there yet. Like I'm in a bad mood about how the season ended, partially because I think there are very clear needs for the Bills roster as a whole. I think as well the loss on Sunday, when we don't have to stick on it too much, you know, 803-0550, if you still want to give your thoughts on the game, we're going to kind of today, you know, if you know it dictates it, we're going to kind of move on to just thoughts on the offseason in the early days here. But for me, this year felt different.
Yeah.
It felt like they had a group that could get it done, even though they weren't necessarily the most talented. But now that the season is over, the fact that you weren't necessarily the most talented is now going to be a problem. They have desperate needs at edge rusher, at interior, really the defensive line as a whole.
Yeah, just the whole, and the whole front.
Cornerback, literally past Benford, is kind of a problem. And now with Benford getting two concussions in like a 10-day period, that's very concerning.
And that second one was pretty scary. I mean, the fact that he was getting basically strapped into the cart was not an easy sight to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hope for the best for him at this point just to make sure that he's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was said on the – it was kind of – I heard a little bit on the broadcast too of it's just like – got to wonder now, like, even if they win, you know, when the game's still going on, is he going to be able to play for the Super Bowl? He would have been a talking point, I think, for those 2 weeks of, is Benford even going to be able to play?
I think it still is at this point, because it's like, you know, you got to hope that he's okay, first of all, as a person. And then second of all, like, what's he going to bring to your team next year? Can he, you know, obviously it's a whole offseason, but concussions are weird. They affect everybody in different ways. So you got to hope for the best for him, and I think he'll be fine, and I think that'll be okay. But you still need cornerbacks. That's not to, like, even if he is there, you still have a big problem at cornerback. Kyer Elam looked all sorts of bad on Sunday.
Unplayable.
Night. Like, unplayable. It was, he's 15, 20 yards off Worthy at the line, and that's just easy pitch and catch at that point. He's falling over on simple slant routes, trying to keep up with Hollywood Brown. So it's,
yeah, there was a play we were looking at, I think, that ultimately became a crossing route. Ball doesn't go his way.
Yeah.
It should have.
Right.
That's how bad,
like,
it was.
But I think for me, like, you know, talking on the feeling of, like, this is the year or whatever, that entire game, even when they were down by 11, I was so confident. And I don't know if it was just the excitement. I don't know if it was, you know, arrogance or just – putting the blinders on and saying, it's the Bills, they can do it. But that whole game, it felt like, yeah, you're playing somewhat the right way. Like, even though it looks bad or it looks tough at times, there's moments where it felt like, yeah, no, they're down by a score and a half, but they're going to win this game. They're going to be fine. Allen's going to turn it on. The defense did pick it up.
The second half,
Matt Milano, I mean, the whole defense was great, but Matt Milano's stop on third down, that for me was just an incredible, like, rush of emotion of, like, yeah, there it is. That's going to be the turning point. That's going to be the defining play of, like, yeah, sure, Josh might have a touchdown here that wins the game, but Milano is the reason why they got that chance. And it did play out like that for a little while, but then it just kind of fell apart. I mean, it was just this kind of crushing feeling. But even in the dying moments, even on that fourth down play where Allen throws the ball to Kincaid, it felt like, oh, yep, there it is. Josh is being Josh, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah,
it's tough. And I don't want to make anybody sad again. I'm sure that everyone's still sad, but, like, it's just this close.
Yeah, you look late in the third quarter when they take that 22-21 lead. They fail in the 2-point conversion again, which kind of summed up a lot of the night. Really, any of those leverage moments, whether it be fourth downs, two-point conversions, they failed them.
Do you think if they kicked both extra points, it would have gone differently?
Would Kansas City
have played differently?
I think both teams would have played differently. I think the problem was, I think, simply put, the Chiefs players played better than the Bills players. Mm-hmm. I don't even necessarily know if it came down to coaching too much.
I think it did, to an extent.
Because
Kansas City did have some plays where it was drastically different than anything you've saw from them this season, especially for the Bills and Chiefs, because they've seen each other so much that they were, you know, bang on the, all right, let's change things up right here, right now, because this is what matters. And the one that sticks out to me is the last play. Osiris Torrance talked about it yesterday in the locker cleanout. Usually when they line up on the heavy side, that's not the side they're going to blitz from. And they were lined up heavy on the right side, and the blitz came from the right side. That's something that they've never seen before. And same thing with some of their red zone offenses. Like, it's so interesting to me how easily they changed all that and how flawlessly it all went. Because for a team that has played a specific way all season long, to just basically throw that out the window, or throw most of that out the window, and go to a completely new game plan, that's really impressive to me. In it's speaking a lot to what Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo can do, because that, and I'm not trying to discredit, you know, McDermott, Babich, and mm-hmm. Brady, but that right there is kind of like the defining edge in some of these games, because I really think that all the Bills coaching staff had a pretty decent game plan. They had a good plan for what Kansas City was in week 11 and for what they perceived them to be. But that's where Reed and Spags step in and say, no, this is what we are today.
I think to a certain extent, I mean, again, the players have to, it's a risk. I heard Sal Capaccio talking about that with Mike and Chris. That's a risk to change everything and hope mm-hmm. your players all execute to the way they did. The Bills get a stop late in the third quarter. They have the ball to start the fourth quarter up 22-21. They score there. They take a two-possession lead. So, I mean, as great as Kansas City put themselves in a position, along with that, they only can kick a field goal
mm-hmm.
in their last offensive – truthfully, ultimately their last offensive drive that mattered, because they get the ball back. They're kind of able to just kind of kill the clock.
That one could have gone interesting, though. The very last one?
Yeah.
I don't think that gets talked about enough. If the Bills did get the stop there and, you know, Butker kicks a field goal, they've still got about a minute left on the clock, down six.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, it's a lot to ask, but it's still like you have trust in the Bills' offense to do something. And – I feel like that kind of gets skipped over because of how badly their actual last offensive drive went.
Yeah, and it was a bad offensive drive for the. Again, there were moments the Bills could have taken it. They don't. Mm-hmm. Allen, I think, was up and down the entire game, which is incredibly frustrating to watch because he's the reason they're there, ultimately.
Right.
As good of a roster as you've built, and that's true of any of these great teams, Mahomes, Lamar, Allen, Burrow, Herbert, Daniels, they're not there. This is an entire. The Eagles are like the only other team that I think you could put like a solid quarterback on the Eagles. They'd still probably be there. Because of how talented they are and how they want to play the game, which is Saquon. And they have A.J. Brown. They got Devonta Smith. They got Dallas. I mean, that's an unbelievable roster. But on first and second down, Allen hits nobody. He's throwing the one, I think it's on second down, where he just kind of throws it over the middle of the field. He's got a wide open gap on the right side that he can just take in a run.
Yeah.
And just there was a lot over the last two games where I thought there were genuine mental mistakes by Allen, whether it be to start the Chiefs game where all we've talked about this year is he hasn't put the ball in harm's way. He's been very good at avoiding that.
First pass of the game.
The first two. He should have essentially thrown two picks. He couldn't have, but both should have been intercepted. And then against Baltimore. Baltimore fooled him constantly into calling audibles at the line for negative plays. A lot of the screen passes we've been talking about and complaining about were Allen changing plays at the line, thinking he was getting coverage. Look, I love Allen, but at a certain point, these last 2 years have ended with him not really giving you the best at the end.
Yeah, and I think also, too, I think it was so jarring this year because all season long you didn't see those mental mistakes, and then it's like every single mental mistake he could have made throughout the season came out in two games. And there's two ways to look at that. Like, sure, he was great in the regular season and he didn't make any mistakes there, but they all came out in the most important games. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you want him to make mistakes in the regular season so they don't come out in the games, if that's how it's going to work. Like, it's kind of – and again, I don't want to discredit Allen either because, like you said, he's the reason they're there. He is by far the team's most valuable player. And, like, again, we're going to have the MVP conversation in a few weeks when they finally award it. But he's had such – amazing moments, and he had a few in this game, but not nearly as many as he needed to. It's you got to find a point where you can get these to stop. You can get these mental mistakes to stop, and I don't really know how you can do that anymore at this point. I mean, it's his first full year with Brady. Sure, you can kind of give him a little bit there, I guess, but.
But they were great all year.
They were great all year.
They were great all year. Yeah. And in the last two playoff games, they beat the Ravens, yes, but in the last two playoff games, he had some real lapses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my frustration. Did he have great moments? Absolutely. The throw to Curtis Samuel, if they win that game, is
that touchdown to Curtis
on fourth down?
And even before that, the throw to Mac Hollins.
Mm-hmm.
Both throws to Mac Hollins, the touchdown and the one where he gets down to the goal line. Those are
arguably iconic moments if they win the game.
Those are incredible throws. He's throwing to a guy who, and this is also credit to Mac Hollins, he was a guy this year where it's like, yeah, he's going to be a special teamer and maybe show up on a few offensive plays. He was like a very pleasant surprise. He led the Bills in touchdowns, in receiving touchdowns this year, and came up in those big moments. He didn't necessarily have a lot of times where he did stuff, but in the big moments, he was the one that was kind of stepping up and making these plays, which was really, you know, on one hand, it's a little like, hey, where are your other wide receivers? But on the other hand, it's like, hey, good for him. Great for him to step up in that moment and be what you need him to be. And I think that kind of gets a little, you know, glossed over because of the fact that they lost. I mean, again, that Mac Hollins touchdown was such an incredible play for both of them.
Yeah, and it gave a jolt to a team that desperately needed it going into half.
Yeah.
803-0550, the number two call. Talking, of course, the Bills game on Sunday. We don't have to move off of it. I mean, we're not going to for most
We've
of the offseason.
How many months?
We're not going to. Also talking, of course, the offseason. I threw it up on Twitter to get some responses as well. Love to hear your thoughts. 803-0550. What's the one thing you need to see from the Bills this offseason for you to consider it? Having been a success, of course, Max Crosby, Miles Garrett's names have been thrown out a lot as potential trade guys. Boundary wide receiver, cornerback depth. There's surprisingly a lot to go to for a team that made the AFC Championship. Let's start today with Mike on the line. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Just a couple of things on the season that just passed and in the future. When your tour mentor always feels like he's one step ahead of you, you gotta step up. And I look at it a little bit differently. I don't think they beat us. We beat ourselves in three out of those four games. Mm-hmm. And not blame, but responsibility goes all the way around. Like 13 seconds, you can blame Levi Wallace and the special teams. And then last year, you can blame Josh for being really quick. It was like digs deep, Shakir end zone, field goal miss, over. And if we bookend Sunday's opening drive and the closing drive, to me, it felt rushed. It felt,
yeah.
Even if they score, you still leave a minute 30 or something for Mahomes. And again, you know why Spagnuolo takes that chance? Because he knows he has Pat on the other side, that I can take this risk right now. And I think at times, and I'm not cracking on McDermott. I'm kind of, I like him, but sometimes I worry about him. But he is a good coach. It's just at times I think the Bills get, or at least this year, or this game, a little stubborn and just sticking to the same thing. And sometimes you've got to take that risk to kind of move forward. And I've just gutted for the guys. And for those fans that call and say the players and the coaches aren't taking responsibility, listen to the interviews. They're more gutted than we are. Absolutely. So, and the future is bright. Lots of money. I trust Bean to do the right thing. And I trust that McDermott will find his way. And you know what's funny, guys? Andy Reid was Sean McDermott for many, 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 many years. So his time will come and our time will come. Just, you know, it's a gut punch, but we'll get there.
Mike, thanks for the call, man. And I liked your first point, and I want to bring up a listener who's also tweeting in, Will, because you mentioned that the Bills seemed very rushed on the first drive and on the last drive. And we were kind of, me and Will were having a little bit of a discussion too. On that final play, the 4th and 5, that ultimately ends up in a prayer ball to Dalton Kincaid, and you can argue you should have catched it, whatever. They probably should have been in a better spot. Josh, you mentioned too, you know, they rush on that strong side, which they never did. Mm-hmm. Torrance brought it up. Do you know when that play is snapped on the snap count? 18 seconds are left on the snap count on ultimately the play of the season. I love Josh Allen. These are the mental mistakes I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Go to the line. See if you can check anything. You got time. You've got more than enough time for an NFL quarterback. And instead, it's rushed. They blitz. No idea. Runs to the right, so it cuts off the entire left side of the field. Understandably so.
He always runs to the right, which usually is fine because it's...
Well, it's his dominant side. He can make better throws.
It's where he makes most of the magic plays, too.
Completely understand. But I think it's lost in the sense of... Dalton Kincaid should have caught the pass. Or if you're Benjamin Solak, Josh Allen should have eyes in the back of the head like a teacher and throw it to Khalil Shakir. I don't know.
I mean, to that one point real quick, I completely understand with all that. But Allen's got to know where the route is, I think, right? Like that's...
Yeah, but there's no shot he can throw it. There's no shot he can throw it. He's immediately running two guys in his face. He can't get on his back foot and launch it.
Right, but we've seen him try stuff like that, so... You know,
I think it would be a bad idea because remember that ball's going to loft up there.
Mm-hmm.
Shakir's wide open, sure, but then there's going to be a guy getting times, there much faster. Time, yeah. For me, it was just you had 18 seconds on the snap clock.
Mm-hmm.
Take your time, see if you can get a hard count to see where the blitz is coming from. Because then, if he does, We don't have Torrance saying, we were surprised they blitzed the side they never do.
You can see on the play that Torrance is completely unprepared.
Yeah.
Like, and that's no, and again, that's no discredit to him, because
they studied on film. They did something completely different.
He wasn't expecting it at all. So I also think
that's where, like, your quarterback at the line needs to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Because then if they figure that out, hey, they're blitzing, cool, now we got it. And then all of a sudden, that Shakir route
is wide open.
He's going to be wide open. He's got time to throw it, dumps it off, and he might have run into the end zone. He was that wide open. And we've seen he's a bouncy ball.
Yeah,
no one can take him down immediately.
You had a blocker in front of him, too. Like, he was going to have a lot of time and space.
Yeah.
At least he'll get the first down, maybe even the field goal range at that point.
But this is where, look, I think everyone on the Bills deserves some blame. I think everybody. Because ultimately, I'm going to blame McDermott and Brady and Babbage for the first half. It looked like a joke. They looked completely unprepared. The second half, as we mentioned, going into the fourth quarter, they had an opportunity, if they could execute, to take a two-score lead. But to go up eight.
Right.
And to put themselves in a position like they were against Baltimore, where they could have just leaned on the Chiefs. And you ultimately saw, too, in a crucial drive for the Chiefs, all they could get was a field goal. So they did get better, which they'd shown most of this year, that they got really a lot better in the second half. But it was mental mistakes throughout. It was execution issues throughout. I think that's also where talent play is coming into this, where you got a great season out of, I think, a team that is somewhat limited in talent. You really did not have a wide receiver that could stretch the field. We all hoped it was going to be Amari Cooper. It never did. Shakir is awesome at his role, but he's not a number one receiver. James Cook, I'd like to see them give him the ball more, purely because I think he's the best playmaker not named Josh Allen.
I'd like to see them give him a contract. I mean, he
seems to be where the NFL is going, so I can understand it.
I think he could be really a big part of this team for a lot of years to come. You got to see how the money works out, but I think he's a very key piece to this offense going forward.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to next on the line. It's going to be Nico. Nico, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, fellas, how's it going? Just kind of dealing with the loss like everybody else. You guys are making some good points about what I wanted to talk about. And, you know, we talk about McDermott, and it's like, I don't think he's a bad coach. I really don't. I just, you know, it's like we have like the second best coach in the league or the third best coach, and we're never going to get over the best ones. And, you know, just looking at the game, it's like, look at all of the different things Kansas City did to prepare for us. What did we do? We did nothing. It's like, we don't have any cool blitzes. We don't have any like plays that we've saved. We just do the same thing over and over again, and we lose over and over again. And it's like, we're stuck in this, you know, we have a great coach, but I just don't think they put their players in a position to win against other great coaches. And so I don't know what you do with that though, because, you know, if you get rid of McDermott, it's like, you might not find somebody as good as him, but, you know, is he as good as the top tier coaches? And I just think we're just going to keep getting outsmarted by the Andy Reids of the world.
That's kind of about it. I mean, Nico, I love the point, man. Thanks for the call. But that's kind of about it. I think we all should get to a point. I mentioned it yesterday. I was only on for about a half hour once Sal went to locker cleanup. But I mentioned, like, Sunday was the first time I felt like they were genuinely dealing with the Michael Jordan Bulls of the NFL. That was the first time where it was just, okay, Spags is going to be in the Hall of Fame, the first coordinator to go in the Hall of Fame. He's going to. This is absurd. Reid is the best coach in the NFL, I think, by quite a margin. I also am going to argue the Bills don't have as good of players as the Chiefs. I don't think they do. We're talking about, you know, some of these blitzes that the Chiefs have. The Bills have them. Rousseau can't get home. AJ Epenesa can't get home.
Is it
Karloftis, Chris Jones, they can. Trent McDuffie is a far better cornerback than most of what the Bills have. Christian Benford has his argument. But McDuffie's better than pretty much everyone else they have.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the secondary, the safeties they had for 2 years prior. I think they just have overall better players.
Yeah,
at some pretty key positions that allows Spags to get the most out of them, allows Reid to get the most out of them. I wasn't the biggest Worthy guy coming out of Texas, which is surprising, me being a Texas fan. I didn't like his fit with the Bills, and ultimately I still don't really like his long-term potential in the NFL. But the Chiefs know how to get the most out of him. The Bills, who do they have? Mac Hollins led them in touchdown catches. Dalton Kincaid, their first-round tight end. I know he had a torn PCL. We're doing the Gabe Davis thing already. I can feel it. But what has he done in 2 years that gives you any confidence in that first-round pick? Keon Coleman. What gives you any confidence that he's going to eventually become arguably, I'm not even saying he has to be definitively, but arguably an elite player at his position? None up to this point. I think they have a great offensive line. They lost on that day. They needed to be so much better, and they lost on that day. How many of those tush pushes? I'm listening to the broadcast, so I get a little bit of a delay, or I get a little ahead of the TV. Constantly, the entire game was, I don't know if he got it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be close. That was the entire game, where for all year, fourth down was a joke.
Yeah, it was. You knew that you were going to get it.
It was snack time.
Yeah.
It was it was like punting in the kickoff. You're like, yeah, all right. Call me when it's first down. They're going to run an actual play.
Right. I think it's also like to go back to the whole like star power point too. Like I've seen tweets all morning. We got one here from Bubba. They need to get someone. Teams need to game plan around other than Josh.
I mean, agree.
Yes, you have to kind of game plan for James Cook now. That's a new development. But other than that, on offense, what do you have to game plan for? All right, we got to eliminate these wide receivers because Allen can throw to them, but they're not elite wide receivers that can like outplay us essentially. Mm-hmm. And on defense, who is there? I mean, sure, you have Ed Oliver, you have Greg Rousseau, you have Christian Benford, Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, and those guys have great moments and strings of games where they have great moments, but it's never game after game after game. Every team is singling those guys out because they need to stop them.
Yeah.
Like Ed Oliver, for as good as he was for the past few years, this was not the season that you needed from him.
No.
You needed to have that and more from what he did when he had his 8-sack season. What was that, last year or 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That needed to be that plus a few more sacks in there. I mean, it was not at all what you expected to see from him this season.
No.
And for the linebackers, like Bernard and Milano and even Dorian Williams to a certain point, they all, had their moments, but it needs to be more of game in and game out. Every team fears you, and that's what the Bills lack. They have Josh Allen. They don't have a lot else that can worry a defensive coordinator or an offensive coordinator every single night leading up to that game.
Yep. 803-0550, the number to call. Phone lines are logged up right now, so we're going to take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll take a lot of those so you can call in as well. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Football can easily be turned into a results-driven business. But I learned that this team is special, it's resilient. And the mindset I think we've had all year is the same mindset we want to have next year, especially as an offense. Just the unselfish mentality that so many of our guys had. But there's a lot of amazing, incredible things about this team that we'll carry over to next year.
Buffalo Bills tight end Dawson Knox speaking there on the unselfish attitude of the offense this year. The everyone eats did work. First team in NFL history to have 30 touchdown passes and 30 rushing touchdowns. I do think, though, there are ways to augment that. You needed a boundary wide receiver. You need speed. You need overall team speed, I think, to get even more out of that offense. But if we're taking it just as this season, I was very happy with the offense. But I think there's a little bit more you can definitely get from it. Now, especially that you have the offensive line, James Cook, you add one more, I think, legitimate receiver on this team with Khalil Shakir, with Keon Coleman's like potential like asset to like the red zone and just being a big body. I like what they have.
You know what? You didn't win the Super Bowl, so ultimately there's always room for improvement. And I'm not saying that as, trying to be
That's fair.
That guy. But at the same time, like you said, you need speed. You didn't have anyone that could make separation. Sure, Keon Coleman can go up and make big catches. They even tried that late in the game, or maybe it was earlier in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The same play they did in Seattle, where he goes up and catches the ball over Woolen. They tried that against Kansas City, just didn't work out the same way. It's a proven play that's worked before because he also kind of did it in the Jets game. Granted, the pass was probably intended for Ty Johnson and Coleman came in out of nowhere, but there's certain aspects to all these wide receivers that could be good, but you got to add that one last guy that can just burn you down the sideline. And they haven't had that.
Yeah.
So Even with Diggs, they didn't really have that.
No, because that was not really Diggs' game. Diggs was a great deep ball guy, but yeah. he was not a burner necessarily. No. They really have not had that guy in a long time. I'd argue they haven't really had it in the McDermott era, which mm-hmm. is somewhat frustrating. Again,
closest you can get is John Brown.
Oh, no, you're right. John Brown absolutely counts there. I've mentioned it, and I'll probably keep mentioning, even though I kind of have become wrong here, but I was not the biggest Worthy guy coming out of college. Of the Texas guys, I wanted to add Nye Mitchell. I don't think that was ever surprising by most people. And his rookie year was a disaster. And I will defend it constantly that his quarterback play was subpar. 803-0550.
Subpar. It was well below par.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to like argue. I'm like, what?
No, it was well below par.
803-0550, the number two call. Talking a lot about the game on Sunday, but also looking forward now as we are well into the offseason. The Senior Bowl is this weekend. The first Senior Bowl practice is today. We go to Tom on the line. Tom, how are we doing this morning? Tom, are you there? Oh, that's sad. Tom's not there. That's frustrating. Well, on to Joey. Joey, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. What's going on? How you doing?
Doing all right.
Doing as best as we can.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Yesterday, I had off yesterday. I only left my bed to eat and to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, oh, here we are once again. Real quick, I'm going to keep this under a minute, real short and sweet. During the 2017 draft, when it was the number 10 pick, I saw Mahomes there, and I was with all my boys, and we were having a good time. And I'm like, oh, I hope we pick him. Now, the moment we traded out of that pick to Kansas City, the house across the street blew up, okay? And we were all stunned, but I am such a diehard Bills fan that the only thing I thought about was, oh, my God, is this good or bad? Is this an omen? Now, I am the most positive Bills fan on planet Earth. During that game, I just constantly said out loud, the Bills are going to win. It didn't happen. But now, years later, we are 0-4 and we can't get past Mahomes. I actually have a question for you guys. Who was the guy who actually decided to trade that pick? Was it McDermott or was it still Doug Whaley doing that draft?
Ooh, Joey, thanks for the call. I think that was McDermott, because ultimately Whaley is let go immediately after that, so I can't imagine. I think that was McDermott, and that's partially why I know the 2017 draft will always have that. They traded the pick that ultimately allowed for Mahomes. I understand that. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a little different. Just for the context, McDermott didn't even have his GM yet. And Mahomes, if you do remember, he's the third quarterback taken. Ultimately, Mitch goes first, and then Deshaun Watson. Mahomes was considered a huge flight risk mm-hmm. for a lot of guys. Had all the talent in the world,
right?
But remember,
he was the first wave of the new kind of prototype quarterback. I guess
yeah.
if you want to call it that.
But the problem again, the context here is already the expectations were the 2018 draft class is going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
It was already getting compared to 83. So if you're McDermott, I don't have a GM yet. This is my first draft. I've been here for 3 months. The GM I'm working with is going to be let go for the guy I'm ultimately going to replace him with. Why in the hell would I pick a quarterback where I will ultimately already be there setting up my franchise to, if this guy doesn't work, I'll be fired in 3 years.
Right. Yeah,
they had a plan and ultimately worked because they got their guy in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But the 2017 class was not considered this great, you need to get one of these guys class. Again, Mitch Trubisky is taken like third overall, which looking back on it, even the night of was stunning. But I understand it because the omens are not great, but at the time, no. And Trubisky was actually taken second, not third. But so it makes it even worse. Again, the omen looks bad. The context, though, I think it truthfully would have been a terrible move by McDermott to take a quarterback in 2017.
He did take a quarterback in 2017. Nathan Peterman.
Well, not a
in
first
like the sixth round.
Fifth round. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I had to throw that in there. But no, I think you're right. Like I get it. It's always going to be
uncomfortable.
It makes 100% sense though. Like when you look at it big picture, when you look at it just at the trade, it looks terrible. Like it objectively looks terrible. But like I said, he was the first of that. I'm going to call it the prototype quarterback, where you're testing this out. Like you're seeing what the next generation of quarterback is going to be. sure, Allen kind of gets there in a more flashy way, but Mahomes was the same thing. Mahomes was this guy where it's like you're taking a chance. He went to a little bit of a smaller school. Not saying Texas Tech is all that small, but it's not typically a school you'd
They win seven games, they put up 70 points a game. It is what it is.
Sure, yeah. But, like, same thing with Allen. Like, he's going to Wyoming. Yep. He's this guy that's kind of unheard of. He had no offers out of high school. Like, all this stuff, like, it really plays into just kind of everything leading up to now. Like, the way their legacies have started compared to now. And it adds so much more to the game, I think, in that aspect, too. Because they're both kind of not necessarily looked at the same in the draft, but it was a risk taking both of them. Mm-hmm. So
a huge risk.
Yeah. And I think that's, again, to your point, like why they wouldn't have done it. Because mm-hmm. it just didn't make sense.
Yep. Let's go now to Joe on the line. Joe, how are we doing this morning?
Yes. Good morning. I guess my comment is, well, I got a few comments, and that's about the, I just don't believe that McDermott is the man that's going to lead the Bills to the promised land for a couple of weeks. I mean, all this guy is the new so-called, like, Marty Schottenheimer. If you look up those records between McDermott and Schottenheimer, I mean, they pretty much resemble each other. And, you know, and as long as we have McDermott, we're going to be playing checkers, and Kansas City's going to be playing chess. They've gotten constantly outcoached, and when plays need to be made, Kansas City makes those plays. Buffalo does not make these plays. And, you know, and then you guys are a little bit contradicting yourselves when you say you both expected Buffalo to win the game. I thought the only way Buffalo was going to win this game is if they won the turnover battle by maybe 3 or 4 to 1 or something like that, and they eventually ended up scoring touchdowns on those turnovers. But if you look at the matchups, the only clear advantages the Bills had was running back and offensive line. That's the only two areas. Other than that, I don't know why you would ever think that unless Buffalo got a lot of help on the turnover battle, that they would ever win this game.
Joe, they were leading the game going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean...
You're acting like they needed like six turnovers
Andy
to win
Reid
this.
Andy Reid wasn't going to have his way with this team like he always does.
But he kind of didn't. They got a field goal. If Allen and the offense could score, they were going to win the game or at least have the lead with like 10 seconds left. You're acting like they were blown out.
No, you guys are missing the point. You are missing the point. They had the lead. I get it. But at the end of the day, guess what? They didn't make the plays. Andy Reid and his team made the plays.
So it's not the players' fault then? You're saying they make the plays.
With the same passes. When was the last time the Buffalo had 4 or 5 intermediate passes down the field? I mean, in the playoffs, they ran the same plays over and over and over again. What would ever make you believe that they were going to win this game?
They had the lead in the fourth quarter, Joe. Thanks for the call. And also, Marty Schottenheimer. I'm tired of this comparison. He was 5-13 in the playoffs. McDermott already has more wins than him in the playoffs. He has 7.
Yeah, and
he made it to one AFC championship game in the middle of his career. McDermott's made it to 2. Mm-hmm. And again, give me another team who's making Super Bowls and winning them in the AFC. Come on. And we're at, they need to win the turnover battle by 4 or 5. But they won it by 1, and again, they had the lead in the fourth.
Yeah,
and if their players could make plays, they maybe have something. Allen, you have 18 seconds on the play clock. Check for a blitz. It's 4th and 5. It's the play of the season.
Yeah.
Instead of rushing it. It's not a coaching. Maybe complain about the players once or twice. Allen, 2 years in a row, you have a moment to go down the field and score to win a game or at least to tie it. You gave Tyler Bass a field goal, and this time you didn't even give him anything. It's not always McDermott. What helps the Chiefs, they have closers. They have guys that in the moments, they make plays. We talk about how even if the field goal went in last year against the Chiefs, we all kind of assumed the Chiefs would go down and score, right? Like, that's kind of where we're at. Hell, let's go to last week against the divisional round. Lamar went right down the field and scored. If Mark Andrews catches that 2-point, sweet. It's a tie game for the Ravens. Why is anyone convinced now that Allen's going to lead this team down and score in the playoffs on a must-win drive? I'm asking honestly. Why would anyone be convinced he's going to go do it? He hasn't twice now. To end the season, he hasn't twice now. The players need to make plays. Is it McDermott's fault that Kyrie Elam is a complete and utter bust and can't cover anybody? They lost arguably an all-pro corner on like the third play of the game.
Right after he made a massive, massive breakup. Like, there's so
and, yet they were still in it.
And to look at
that's coaching.
To look at the turnover battle too. I think in games like this, specifically Bills and Chiefs, or specifically like Bills and Ravens, you have to look at who punted more as well. You have to look at those as turnovers in games like this, because when you look at that, there's times where if you're punting, you're basically just giving, you're basically throwing an interception or a fumble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the way I look at games like this too. Like, you, there's a reason the Bills went for it on fourth down so many times. And they were pretty good at it for the most part. They were just not good at it in the time that it mattered the most. They were 4 for 6 on fourth downs. If you take away the last fourth down of the game, they were 4 for 5. I can't remember the other one that they fell short on, but it was when Allen got pushed across the line. But actually, he didn't. Yeah, never mind that. Like, if you like, there's a reason why they're going for so many fourth downs in this game. Kansas City went 1 for 1. That's because they converted earlier. They didn't need to get to fourth down. They didn't need to worry about that. But then again, you also forced Kansas City to punt more.
In the second half, they were fine.
Yeah.
The defense was very good. You got multiple stops. You kept yourself in the game.
That's what matters.
I just don't understand this feeling that, like, you always knew they were going to lose. They needed to win the turnover battle by, like, 3 or 4 or 5.
In my eyes, they won the turnover battle. Yes, they got one fumble. But they also forced Kansas City to either punt or not go for a touchdown when the Bills went for more.
They set themselves up. I thought the coaching, especially in the second half, was much better. Your players need to make plays. 803-0550 is the number to call. Sal Capaccio coming up in just about 12 minutes. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We've also been getting connected to our fans, and that is brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com really quick, because we've got to get to Sal here at the top of the hour. Jim joins us. Jim, how are we doing today?
Hey, I'm good. Hey, I'll just say morning. That's about it.
There we go.
See, there it is.
And that's it. It's morning. Sun's out, like Dawson Knox said, or whatever. Hey, I agree. I disagree, though, on the McDermott bashing. I can see it, you know, a couple of years ago. I mean, you know, as far as the kickoff, you know, kick it on the ground, waste some time. You know, why are you covering the outside, not the inside? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, he's become more offensive-minded. We see the fourth downs that he's going for. You know, I mean, he's become more offensive minded as far as the game. You know, unfortunately they lost, but you know, the dynamics that the officials played in the game, the calls and the non calls. And I don't want to be that conspiracy theorist, and I don't believe any of that NFL is fixed crap, but they, you know, they did change the whole dynamic of the game. We're up 1 point. We're going. We're driving. And that non-call fourth down changed the whole complexity of the whole entire game. Momentum is the most important thing in a football game. We got it. We're driving. We're up 1. There's a possibility. Who knows? McDermott might even go for 2 to go up 2 scores. You never know. Yeah, we'd be up 8, maybe go for 9. We don't know. The official changed what the perspective of the outcome could be. Plus, it also changed, you know, the dynamics of where we played afterward. Our defense had to go back on the field after they thought we were driving. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was, you know, so to downplay, you know, a couple calls messed every. You know what? It did. Juwan Taylor was lined up in the backfield about 4 or 5 times. You know, he was off center. Ed Oliver, that wasn't offside. We recovered the fumble. I mean, how is McDermott supposed to recover from all that? We did recover. We had a chance on the last drive to finally go and do some. Yes, Josh failed there, but it should have never have come down to that. I don't know. I'm just still at a loss about it. I still can't get over the officiating and how bad it is, but that's just me.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the call, man. We got to run. I agree. I haven't really brought up the officials because I don't really like to. I think a lot of it's subjective. I'm with you. I don't believe it's rigged by any means. Home teams get a lot of calls, and the Chiefs pretty much only play at Arrowhead because they win a lot in the regular season. But yeah, the fourth down spot, I saw a lot of people. I think Sam Monson said it perfectly too. He very clearly got it, but not a single review would have told you he definitively got it. It was like an awkward, but like we all know we got it. But no review is going to tell you you got it. And I remember the two officials coming in from the sidelines having wildly different ideas of where the spot was. And, yeah, I do think that was a huge miss. But that also goes to the point of, guys, it's been your best play, and this offensive line's been awesome. And they could get no push on those. And every fourth down call was incredibly close the entire night. 803-0550, the number two call. When we come back, Sal Capaccio joins the show. Locker cleanout yesterday. We're going to hear from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean at some point this week. We'll get his thoughts on all of that coming up next after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Even though we didn't get what we wanted, we all had the same mindset. You know, we all knew what the goal was. We all knew what the objective was, and we was working towards that. And even though the car is in fallout way, I feel like we can run it back. I'm definitely excited to hear the coaches come back. Hopefully we get as many players we can get to come back as we can so we can build from this and not start over, but just start from now and build and just get better.
Buffalo Bills right guard Osiris Torrence there, and I think he's going to get a lot of his wish. The Bills don't have a ton of cap space. Greg Thompson at Cover One, I saw that was reported yesterday, $25 million what he was seeing for the Bills in terms of cap space this year. They've also got a lot of guys they're going to have to re-sign. Osiris Torrence brought that up. But I think a key, you know, not addition, but just retaining him, Joe Brady is going to come back as OC. We knew that before the AFC Championship game. One thing I do want to rectify, my bad on the Mari Schottenheimer stuff, did make it to three AFC Championships in, I believe, his 21-year coaching or head coaching career, although does still stand a reason. He went 5-13 in the playoffs for much of his career, really lost all the time in wild card games, including having a very talented San Diego team in his later career, losing a wild card game, then losing the divisional round as well to go 0-2 with San Diego. But for more on the Bills, what we heard yesterday in Locker Cleanout Day, and also just really now the season as a whole, we go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how we doing?
All right, guys, you know, just another day of kind of reflecting back and watching some things from Sunday, mm-hmm. And then obviously talking with players yesterday in the locker room.
Yeah, so on yesterday, I mean, we saw a lot of quotes. Some of the key stuff was brought up. We kind of know that Kincaid was dealing with an injury for much of the year, or for at least a portion of the year. I believe it was a torn PCL. We also heard, as we heard an Osiris Torrence clip there, but he mentioned, too, talking about the blitz that Kansas City brought and just, you know, kind of it was a great play design by Spags. What else did you hear, though, yesterday from all the players? I mean, Allen spoke for, I think, almost 20 minutes.
Yeah, there was a few things. We had about, I think there's a good 10 to 12 players people can go listen to back at the WGR550.com and the Odyssey app. You know, Josh obviously talked and the disappointment in it, but the belief still going forward. I think that was a common theme. Like, you know, everybody understands that you climb the mountain and you get near the top. And then when you lose, you have to go all the way back down. But guess what you have to do? You have to climb the mountain again. I mean, that's really just what it comes down to. And they all recognize that the team will change. It does every year. You're not going to play with the exact same 53, 60 guys, whatever it is, who come and go throughout the season. You know, and that's tough for everyone. At the same time, guys are dealing with some contract situations. Reed Ferguson is scheduled to become a free agent. He's the longest tenured Bill. You know, I know he spoke very much about wanting to be in Buffalo. I don't know if the Bills want to go out and get a new long snapper. He's not like he's super old and he can't do it anymore. That's one guy there. Von Miller is under contract, but he has a $23 million cap hit. He said he's playing next year. He said, I'm going to be a Buffalo Bill. I'm coming back and playing. He said, I don't want to speak for the organization, but I think they want me back too. It was asked about restructuring his contract possibly to make that happen. He opened the door to that. He said, there's always things you can do to make things work. Osiris Torrence was very good on explaining what happened on the fourth down and five, the final Bills offensive final play of the season where Josh lofted it up and Dalton Kincaid couldn't come down with it. And, you know, it explained that, you know, their defense had generally been blitzing from the side they do not show. So the Bills slid that way, but they came from the side they were showing. Good call by Steve Spagnuolo, obviously. There's just a lot of things that, you know, we talk with a lot of people about. And then we're going to hear from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean at some point this week. We don't have the official schedule yet. Not sure if it'll be together or probably separate, or if it's going to be the same day or a different day.
Sal, the one thing that I noticed yesterday, specifically with Allen, was the way he talked about the season Dalton Kincaid had. And the quote that stood out to me was, quote, "I've got to be better for him. I didn't feel like I put him in a good enough situations this year, ball placement-wise." That's kind of interesting to me because Kincaid, like, we've talked about it a lot here, barring the last play of the game, this season for Kincaid has been a little bit of an up-and-down season. He's had a little bit of a sophomore slump, if you want to call it that. But it's interesting to see that Allen kind of put some insight in there and saying that he could have been better. And I just – what do you think about that? Like, do you think it is a little bit of both, or do you think, you know, it's kind of – maybe Kincaid has to work on some stuff in the offseason more so than Allen has
to work
on? Well,
listen, I think it's all of that, right? Look, Josh is going to take – Josh is a leader. He's the quarterback. And everything we've known about Josh Allen, he's going to take accountability. Josh Allen could throw a guy a perfect pass, hit him in the hands. Guy drops it. Josh's going to say, "I got to put it in a better spot." I mean, it's just the way he's going to be.
Right,
he's always
going
to talk about that. I think the overall issue here, though, the question you're asking is more about the overall chemistry between Josh and Dalton Kincaid this year. And I thought Dalton Kincaid would be a huge part of this offense. What we're seeing from what Brock Bowers did in Vegas, what we've seen from what Sam Laporta's doing, I mean, even an older Zach Ertz in Washington with a rookie quarterback. I mean, there's just ways that teams are using their really athletic mismatched tight end, which we were told Dalton Kincaid is, that the Bills aren't doing. And they need to find a way to do that next year. I get the everybody eats mentality. That's great. But if you're going to draft a tight end in the first round 2 years later, I think, you know, you need to say, like, why did we draft him? Because he's a mismatch here and he can do that. Now, that said, according to Dawson Knox, Dalton Kincaid had a torn PCL at some point this year and also had, I think, something going on, fluid or something build up in the other knee. So very well could have been part of the reason for, you know, maybe everything didn't hit. And if those things happen early in the year, if they happen in training camp, if they happen within the first couple of weeks, it's tough to recover because by the time you get in the season, you're game planning every week. You don't have the time on task to be able to, like you do in training camp. So I think that it's a very big offseason for Dalton Kincaid going into year three. If you guys look back historically under Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott team since they've been here, year three has been a critical year for a lot of people to make jumps. That's Greg Rousseau. That's Taron Johnson. That's Khalil Shakir. Like year three, Gabe Davis. I think he did some things his first 2 years. But like that year three is always a very critical year in a Bills developmental system, I guess, if you will. And I think this is a big offseason and next year is a big year for Dalton Kincaid.
So, Sal, now looking to the offseason, you know, as far as this team got, they get to the AFC Championship. They had a historically good offense, very efficient. But there does seem to be some pretty clear needs for the Bills. Where, just if right off the top, two days into the offseason, where do you think is maybe the biggest need for the Bills heading into both free agency and the draft?
I think I could come up with three of them. And I think you can prioritize them either any way, but I'm not sure how you want to, you know, however you want to do it. I think they have to address their boundary corner position in some way because Christian Benford's the only guy you have coming back that you can really rely on to say he's really good. What do you have outside of him? Because Rasul Douglas did not have a fantastic year. And I think you could go into the next season with Rasul Douglas. I think I'd be okay with that, but I'd still be very kind of a little weary of what happens. You know, what if he doesn't ever get back to, or what if he has another down year as he starts to get older? Because what we saw after Benford went out is just not good enough. Kyrie Elam is not playing at an NFL level, and the Bills are using him. I love Jamarcus Ingram. I think Jamarcus Ingram deserves a shot. He could wind up being the starter there. But if you go into next year, and I told you right now Jamarcus Ingram's the starter, I think people would say, ooh, you got to do better than that because we haven't seen him actually have that role, and he'd have to step up. It'd be a big spot for him. I think they have to address something in the interior to help stop the run. They were better as the season went on, but they run such a penetrating system. Ed Oliver's a little bit undersized. Daquan Jones had a good year, not a really strong year like he did maybe last year. I think that's got to be something. I actually have four spots. And of course, pass rush, right? I mean, these are all on the defensive side. I think the only spot I'm really comfortable with right now on the defense is linebacker and maybe safety, knowing that Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp will be together, right? I think that I'm feeling pretty good about Rapp and Bishop together after what I saw from Bishop. And I think the middle of the field is okay, you know, in the back six. whatever, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever, and back seven. But I think the boundary. And then pass rusher, obviously, I think anytime you can upgrade, get a really stud pass rusher is a great time. And I think they have to address wide receiver again. I think it's a different conversation as last year where you traded Diggs, you let Gabe Davis go, and it was, oh my God, there's nobody. We've seen Josh Allen elevate pretty much anybody now, right? We know they can do that. I still think they need more, though, guys, right? It's what they had this year when it came time to have critical plays in the biggest of games. We didn't know who they were going to come from, and there weren't enough guys there to be able to choose that one right guy to come to.
Sal, I do want to backtrack here real quick because the Bills just announced James Cook and Connor McGovern are heading to the Pro Bowl. They're serving as alternates for Derrick Henry and Creed Humphrey. But on James Cook, we had a few calls on hold we weren't able to get to, but both were mentioning why James Cook was not on the field to end the game on that Bills final drive. Do you have any insight on that or any thoughts kind of on that final drive? I know for me, not necessarily with Cook, I have been a little frustrated today seeing that there was 18 seconds left on the play clock before or when the Bills snapped the ball. It seemed like a lot of stuff the last, you know, on Sunday was rushed by the Bills. Maybe that's on Josh Allen, maybe that's on coaching, but it felt like there was a lot of stuff that was rushed that didn't necessarily need to be.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, even the poor third down spot, which led to the possibly poor fourth down spot. I mean, I don't want to frame it like I'm blaming it on the refs. I'm not. Mm-hmm. But the controversial spots, right, at the end, with 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Even then, once they had that spot on third down, you could make an argument, well, wait a minute. If you wait, maybe replay assist gives them the first down. Or maybe Sean McDermott challenges the spot. But they went right up to the line and ran the fourth down. They got stopped right there. It was bam, bam. I mean, the series is over right there, right? They rushed up there. 18 seconds left. Yeah, they could have waited. I think the reason for that would be, guys, they thought they knew it was coming, and they were wrong. So they snapped it when they snapped it, if that makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, they look, Josh had two cadences there. He goes through his first cadence to see. What he does is he goes to all that, to see if they start coming. He said he did not see anything. They didn't switch it up. So from there, I think you're comfortable. I don't think that another 18 seconds would have mattered in that situation, I guess, because if Josh does his first cadence and they don't change, then he's just going with, okay, this is what they're coming with. And what happened was they came from the opposite side, as we said. So, you know, credit the Chiefs for that one. And then as far as Cook not being on the field, I agree. We haven't heard from Joe Brady, but my guess is because they wanted to. Now, obviously, James Cook can catch the ball, but we know Ty Johnson's a very good pass catcher. What Ty Johnson does very well compared to James Cook is pass protect. My guess is they wanted to make sure they had an extra guy back there in order to pass protect, or at least to give the Chiefs the idea that the running back is pass protecting, and then he could also go out for a pass. You know, that's just my guess. I would have liked to see James Cook as well on the field.
Sal, looking at just Allen's play overall, where do you think that the kind of just hyperness came from? I mean, it seemed like it was a Josh Allen we hadn't seen all season. He was, and I don't want to rag at him too much, but like he was throwing balls in places that we hadn't seen him throw to in a long time. Like I just saw a highlight I was watching of him throwing to Keon Coleman with two guys on him down on the goal, or three guys on him down on the goal line. It's just like, where did those come from and why did they come out at the time they did, right? Like even when it was earlier in the game was still close and it wasn't, you know, high pressure situation. I guess not as high pressure as the end of the game, but it just felt like that was an Allen we hadn't seen in a long time.
Well, I think the beginning of the game, Josh is always kind of a little too amped up. You know, sometimes he's too amped up. Remember the beginning of the Ravens game, he overshoots Mac Hollins on a hole shot. He's wide open, right? Seems like right in that spot. Like a lot of times we've seen that. Josh gets a little too amped up, like in the beginning of a game. Remember when he used to say that he liked to get hit early in the game so he can feel it and get into the game. And I think the adrenaline can be pumping. You're making decisions fast. You're trying to make a play. Not good passes those first two plays. Josh runs the ball first, and hey, they got him. Maybe he said, I want to get hit early in the game in this one. He got hit. He's into the game. And then they throw two passes, and both of them are off target. And I think the other stuff just goes to trying to make a play. I mean, it's the AFC Championship, and yeah, you'd like him to be settled down and just, you know, be super calm, but they were also, you know, they were coming at him and they were blitzing sometimes and there's pressure and there's a lot that's going on down there and things are moving very, very fast. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think that he still had a good game overall. Not great. Still made some money passes when they counted, when they needed. Guys didn't help him with a couple drops here or there. So I think it just goes to the overall you know, situation of the game and him trying to make a play because Josh Allen is trying to make a play.
All right, Sal, last thing for me, not on the Bills, but I like to have fun with this. One of my favorite things is introductory press conferences for head coaches because they either go one of two ways. They're amazing and everyone's hyped up, Aaron Glenn yesterday with the Jets, or we get memes out of them. Liam Cohen with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Did you see how he said Duvall?
Oh. I did not. I've seen some things going on about it, but I have not paid attention or listened. What happened?
It was the most uninspiring, like
it's bad.
Like, if you think of how people, like, when you're at a Jacksonville game, they get up and they get loud.
Duvall.
Yeah, it was more of a Duvall. Like it was like, it was really weird.
Wow.
It was like high pitched and like almost like he was like scared to say it. Like, it was so weird.
Well, you're right. Press conferences can go a lot of different ways and they don't really mean much, to be honest with you. I remember Nick Sirianni got completely roasted his first ever press conference.
Dan Campbell, same thing.
Dan Campbell, biting kneecaps, right? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You know, two of the better coaches now and better organizations this year and teams, you know, in the NFC at least. So, yeah, but obviously, you know, you can have some fun with that, I guess. And if they don't or they aren't good, things don't turn out, then that'll become a thing again.
Yep. All right, Sal, thanks so much for jumping on with us, and we'll talk again soon, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. Josh, it wasn't even just like how Duvall. It was the eyebrow raise.
And the little head motion, too. Like, it was just weird. Like
I like Liam Cohen as a coach, but I'm like, man, don't do it. Just don't do it.
I just saw it. It's crazy. Embarrassing.
It's crazy.
It's wild.
But then you have Aaron Glenn where, by the end of it, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to run through a wall. And I hate the Jets.
He also, Aaron Glenn also, like, it sounds like he wants nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. Every question he got asked about Aaron Rodgers, he's like, no, I'm not answering that. Like, that part was interesting. Like, I wonder what's going to happen in New York. If he is, you know, how he sounded in his press conference, the Jets could, you know, start to turn things around maybe. But then again, they are still the Jets. And they are still going to make those questionable decisions.
Yeah, so they feel like they're going to need to go through a full reset. I think Miami's getting towards there as well. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the funny part. Like, as frustrated as we all are at the end of this, I think the AFC East has never been more open to the Bills to just
the only team
win
you really,
it in 10 games.
The only team you really have to worry about realistically is eventually the New England Patriots, if they get everything right.
A lot of cap space.
If they get everything right.
Yep, a lot of cap space. They have to draft well. We've already kind of seen with Elliott Wolf. His first draft, not great.
Nope.
After Drake, not great.
But you know what? He didn't draft a round three lineman in the first round, so it's fine.
Yeah, like, that's a fair point, actually. It is not a high bar to get over.
They are moving up. But again, they are the closest team, I think, but they're still like 2-3 years down the road.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go back to the phones, and Steve joins us next. Steve, how are we doing on this fine morning?
You know, like you guys said, it's a morning for sure.
I know. I tried to be more positive there, and it didn't feel right.
Yeah. You know, it was obviously a rough start for Allen, and I think just as a Bills fan, like, my own coping mechanism with it is, I just think I'm going to get this when Josh plays Miami Josh in these playoff games, and, you know, it's, I don't want to dog the coaches because they put him in a spot to go and drive and win these games, and it's just not happening. And, you know, this version of Josh Allen, I mean, he's going into the amen corner of his career with the physical freak that he is, where, you know, you can only expect him to be this beast for three more years. And even, you know, he didn't push through and get those short yardage downs that we thought. So, you know, does he start working out in the off season? Does he change himself a little bit to try and improve physically? But it just makes you, you know, I think he's going to get it. I just, you know, there's always that fear of what happened with Stafford and Detroit that kind of looms just a little bit harder, whereas, you know, is he just going to be so great here and then we're going to lose him and we're going to have this metaverse where we have split jerseys of Josh Allen when he's going to win in the Super Bowl with the 49ers after he's traded. So, you know, not to go to a dark place, but you know, still confident he's going to get it done, but it just it gets a little scary every year that we don't get it.
Steve, man, I totally get it. Thanks for the call. And yeah, of course, like every year you go by. I mean, like I hit a point too. If you had asked me 3-4 years ago, I mean, I thought all these guys were going to get Super Bowls. They were all, in quote unquote, they were too talented.
Everyone would have their year. Like, this time it's Lamar, this time it's Allen.
Yeah, the Chiefs couldn't be as dominant as they always were. I mentioned it yesterday. Like, I didn't think in 2020 they were going to necessarily be this, like, Michael Jordan-esque run that, that they seemingly are on. And yet here they are. And so, like, it is getting more and more stressful and worrisome that, like, every year goes by. And it also, it doesn't help that he himself at times is not getting it done. You know, 13 seconds is one thing. Mm-hmm. He gave you the lead. Yeah. But as we've all kind of mentioned now, that was only the divisional route. He'd have to eventually – he would have to get past a Bengals team that you did not match up well with. We found that out after –
the next year.
Yeah, the next year. But, I mean, that would have been a tough go, too, if all of a sudden, like, they do make that AFC Championship and they lost to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's painful that you keep losing to Kansas City, but we know, like, Cincinnati became kind of a bugaboo for them.
But if you had gotten a win over them that year, this would feel a little bit different. I don't think a lot different, but this would feel a little bit different.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the complete and utter domination it feels like that they're on, especially in the playoffs. It wouldn't feel like, I think, where many of us have gotten to, which is the regular season is meaningless. Why are we doing this? Like, it is just weeks where our players can get hurt. You know, we know we're going to be there in the playoffs.
Especially,
why
and that's kind of how last year felt.
Yeah,
especially
100%.
Because of the fact that you had your fifth and sixth string linebackers going up against the Chiefs last year. This year, it wasn't nearly as bad injury-wise. Of course, obviously, we talked about it. You lose Christian Benford early in the game, which was very unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, most of the game, you played clean. You didn't have any injuries. You didn't have anyone really missing. And ultimately, we find out afterwards, you know, Kincaid's been dealing with stuff all season long.
Yep.
But I just think that when you look at this rivalry as a whole, it's just so – it's so difficult to look at from a record standpoint – just because of the fact that if you take away the gravity of the games, it's pretty even because they're 5-5, I think, right? Or maybe 6-5 now.
I think it's 6-5 now.
But still, if you take away the gravity of the games, they're very even. But it's the importance of the game that makes it so uneven and so lopsided.
You know where the regular season wins feel hollow too? They're not getting the one seed.
Yeah, right. Especially this year. This year was one of the I think this year is more than most, right? Just because of the fact that you were the only team in the NFL to get up there and beat them, and you're kind of looking around like, guys, what are we doing?
Yeah, well, especially because of all the late game.
There was the Broncos win. Sorry.
But even the Raiders game though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, snap the ball correctly. We're looking right. All right. There's a few games there where you're like, come on,
Isaiah Likely. I think that is shrink your feet.
Yeah, I think that is a big reason why a lot of these regular season wins have begun to really feel hollow. Is that you're not even getting the one seed. You're not even getting home field advantage. Yeah, you got them to come to your place last year because they were the 3 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it didn't matter. You had no linebackers left. You know, and this is where we were talking about with the one seed. Home field advantage means a lot. Sure, it was also the rest aspect. You know, now looking back at it, Dalton Kincaid, bet he would have loved a little bit of rest for the knees, because he also had fluid in the other one.
Right.
You know, it is what it is, but I think that's also become a frustrating aspect, too, that they are not getting the one seed, even when they do get the wins over them. And they're going to play them next year, and I think it's at home as well. I got to check now the 2025 opponents, but I believe it's at home. You got to see what you're going to do. 803-0550 is the number to call. We're going to continue to take your calls here until the top of the hour. We'll get you over to Sabres Live. As the Sabres are in action tonight, they take on Boston at 7 p.m. pregame coming up at 6. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
It's a special team. Like I told you guys earlier in the year, that I really couldn't put my finger on what was happening. Some of the things that happened on this team didn't happen on those two Super Bowl teams that I had. Some of the bonds that we had, the way we prepared this coaching staff, this locker room, like it was things on this team that stood out that wasn't on like those last two Super Bowl teams that I had. It just didn't go our way.
There's a Buffalo Bills edge rusher, Von Miller. I heard Jeremy and Joe say it. I fully agree. I think that was probably his last game as a Buffalo Bill.
Mm-hmm.
He took the pay cut. It never really got off the ground due to his injury happening in his first season. And then, you know, there were some suspensions and stuff like that. And it's just, there is sort of a what could have been with Miller. because of how good that first half of his first season was.
Yeah, I remember just the feeling of watching him do that was just,
it was great.
This is it. This is as advertised. Right?
Five sacks against the Rams in week one. They looked unstoppable. Mm-hmm. He looked amazing. It was like, great, this is the play. He makes a key play against a Kansas City team in the regular season that gets him a win. Like,
yep.
It's exactly what you paid for. And then he tears his ACL on Thanksgiving. Ultimately, I think being the second straight year
that a Bills player tore his ACL on Thanksgiving.
Because Trey the year prior and then Von Miller. And it was just like, come on. But they have to do way better at that position now. I mean, that's why we're talking about a Max Crosby or a Myles Garrett trade, is because they need to be much better there. I will tell you, though, also, that clip makes me feel not better at all. Hearing that, like, there were things on this team that I didn't see on my two Super Bowl teams. Great, don't care. Don't care. You lost. Don't care.
Yeah.
That only twists the knife.
Right.
We'll see what happens, though. It's going to be a very interesting offseason for the Bills, especially because you showed that you can win kind of with anybody and that the team will be good enough even in years of transition. You've got a first-round pick. You've got 2 seconds. You do have some cap space. You're not eating up the dead cap anymore. I don't anticipate any of those massive cuts that we saw or massive cuts and or trades that we saw last year. So, to Osiris Torrance's point, I think you're going to get a lot of the same team with a few additions here and there. But an addition like a Max Crosby or somebody like that would feel incredible and different, the whole thing. But I think it is going to be a lot of the same roster going into next year. 803-0550, the number two call. Let's get back to your phones as Cleveland is next to join us. Cleveland, how are we doing this morning?
Great, great. I'm absolutely triggered at some of the things that I heard earlier. First of all, please, please, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan hearing this, let this be the last day you entertain the fire McDermott or questioning McDermott anything. Since being the McDermott has shown up in Western New York, we have been not perennial playoff 10-win teams, AFC East winning teams, but Super Bowl contenders. And before them, we were too busy winning 6 and 7 games a year and undeveloping bad talent. So since Bean and McDermott has shown up, I've been nothing but smiles, and I would like them to stay here as long as they would like to stay here. Secondly, during the game, I absolutely don't think that play to Keon Coleman when we needed 6, that was not the play call. That was not the move. I don't think you throw it up to a rookie 50-50 ball in an AFC Championship game. Whether or not we've seen him do it, I don't think we've seen him do it enough to put that moment on him in that spot. I'm absolutely floored at the lack of production that we got out of Amari Cooper, or should I say the lack of targets we've given him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's maybe he didn't get acclimated to the playbook in time. And I'm not just talking about the AFC Championship game. I'm talking about since he's been in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absolutely floored. I thought he was going to be absolutely amazing. And lastly, I think that, again, and this is going back to my point with Bean and McDermott, these guys have done nothing but develop talent, great talent. I'm sorry, not great talent. I should say some of our talent has overachieved because of their coaching. And I absolutely believe that our weakness in the wide receiver room is what showed. And I love the idea of getting the Max Crosby, but I love the idea of getting a stud number one receiver even better, someone who can run routes elitely, because Keon Coleman does not run routes great at all. We do not have a route runner. I just feel like it's the blame goes all the way around. But let's stop. Again, I am absolutely triggered when I hear people question McDermott as if this guy in Bean's marriage has been nothing but W's for us. I'm sorry we don't have the greatest coach of all time. Spagnuolo dialed up an absolutely incredible blitz. We got to just tip our hats to that. I love Bean. I love McDermott. Let them stay here. Go Bills.
Cleveland, man, thanks for the call. I can get to most of that. I can understand where some of the complaints come with McDermott and Bean. Bean, I think especially, is somebody I'm getting more and more critical of as the years go by. His first round and even to a certain extent a lot of his second round picks are just not panning out. They're guys.
They're not unplayable, but they're not superstars, or they're not first or second round talents.
Yep. And yeah, busts will happen, but I think it's almost more painful when it's a first round pick that just you're like, he's good. And then you're debating a second contract or not. Right. I can almost argue that's worse. A bust, you know what to do. In some of the situations the Bills are in, you kind of don't know what to do. I've gotten to a point. I've said it a lot today and a little bit yesterday too. I've gotten to a point. It's just, I think it's time to kind of tip your hat a little bit to Kansas City where they're at. But that's where the talent comes in. Then you need to get more talent than them. You can't also be beat on the talent level. And they've got a Hall of Famer in Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, elite players in guys like Trent McDuffie. Nick Bolton's an amazing linebacker for them as well. George Karlaftis, a late-round edge rusher they got, is a huge disruptor on that defensive line. Those are where some of my issues are. To the wide receivers, outside of Khalil Shakir, I think it's probably right to say they don't really have any elite route runners. I love what Shakir does. There is a limit, though, to what he does because he does not really play much on the outside. He's not going to be a guy that's going to demand 130 targets.
In terms of going to get somebody, though, like at this point, it's basically just like T. Higgins, right?
Yeah, and I'm not doing that.
Like, who else is available that you could go out and get right now that would be a number one wide receiver? It's T. Higgins and
Amari Cooper.
Right. Yeah. But even then, is Amari Cooper your best option?
No. I think for me, I'm always going to be somebody not really going in free agency to add a big-time wide receiver. I like to, like, honestly, what they do with Curtis Samuel. 2-3-year deal here. You're going to come in. We have, like, an idea for you, the whole thing. I mean, again, if he doesn't get a tear in his toe, we might have something here.
Because he did turn it on a little bit towards the end of the year. I mean, you can hopefully see that next year more because he's in a 3-year deal.
Yep. I'm always somebody, though. I'll look to the draft. I mentioned it with Jeremy and Joe on the way out. A month and a half ago, I wanted Matthew Golden.
Yeah.
He really turned it on to the point where I don't think he'll be there.
But
in their first-round pick. I like Isaiah Bond, though.
But do you think they can get a number one wide receiver with a late first or even a mid to late second?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
The high ends, you're looking at guys like Davante Adams, Justin Jefferson's late first. You know, that's the high ends. Mm-hmm. But I think you get like a really, really good receiver in the late first.
Because I'm just thinking about this. It's kind of skewed because this past draft had so many names in it and so many guys that went all over the place that are going to be good NFL talents eventually. But it was a bit skewed because it was a draft that was loaded up with wide receivers. You knew that going into it. And sure, some of them might not pan out. Some of them haven't panned out so far. But I just wonder, can you get what you need in the draft?
I think so. Absolutely.
Okay.
It's not the receiver class that it was last year. I think there's probably going to be maybe three guys taken in the first round because there's a lot of talent at the edge rushers, early offensive line, the defensive tackle class. Everybody that covers the draft has been saying the same thing. This is a very deep defensive tackle class, which works out really well for the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of your biggest needs.
I'm looking at some of the wide receiver free agents. You got Diggs, T. Higgins, Keenan Allen. It's kind of interesting there, I think. Not as number one, but just as a guy. Amari Cooper, and the next one to round out the top five, Chris Godwin. So really nothing that super jumps off the page, but there are some names out there this offseason that you could theoretically entertain. But again, not really any number one wide receiver guys except for T. Higgins. But that's going to cost you. I mean, is that worth it? But it's a lot of cap.
Yep. Next up, let's go to Ed on the line. Ed, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Just to transition from last caller, was that 10 or 11 absolutely? I couldn't keep track.
It was a lot. It was a lot. I can understand. I can understand the vibes. I get it.
So just one further thought from him, what you guys were just saying, and that gets my point is, I don't think an elite wide receiver free agent wise is the way to go, because we've seen so many teams, either double or put their best player on that receiver, and then you're out of luck. But my point, I think they need to build on defense. But my point is, I went back and looked, so 10 of the last 13 AFC championship games have been won by the home team, and I think that, combined with what I'll say in a minute, is sort of the road to victory for the Bills here.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have enough bites at the apple with home field advantage as the top seed, i.e.,
in the championship game. You got to get to the championship game. And if you're at home, I actually think they win that game if they were at home this past weekend. But the other issue here, guys, and I'll finish up, is that if you look at last year, well, this year, right, with Bedford going out and Rapnop being in, last year the backs are out. The year before, Von Miller's out. Like, if I were the Bills, I would just stockpile as much defensive backs, linebacks, whatever, because that seems to be the kryptonite here when it comes to them exiting the playoffs. So thanks for taking the call, guys.
Ed, man, thanks for the, calling in. And it's tough. You only have so many roster spots, and that's the thing is you can prepare for injuries and all that. But even if you stockpile, eventually your depth's just not going to be that good. We saw it. I mean, the first two or the top two corners for the Bills, not bad. Benford, very good. Russell Douglas, bit of a down year this year, and then you saw it. I mean, the first round talent they had at the position. We talked with Sal Capaccio about it. Not playing at NFL level. So even if you try to stockpile, you're going to miss. I agree. I think they need to build through the defense this year. They do not have any true elite game-changing players. I think that has become a huge detriment to what they can do, and I think that's a big part of the Chiefs' success. They can close out games. Go to last year when they didn't have home field advantage. I want to get to that point, too. When they didn't have home field advantage, Chris Jones was ending games. He ended like three games in a row for them to get to the Super Bowl. The Bills really don't have that guy. They thought they had it in Von Miller. His first year here, he gets injured. We mentioned it. On home field, surprise, surprise, the Chiefs bucked the trend there when they won on the road. But to the point, I do think it's important, home field. I like the idea that maybe they could have won it if it was at home. I do like that idea, but we did see the Bills lose 2 years in a row at home in the playoffs, so it's not the end-all, be-all for me. I think the big difference there is the rest. You only have to win one game to get to the championship game. Your guys are staying healthy, to your point there as well. Like, guys are getting hurt. The Bills had the one seed. It's one less game. I'm not saying that they would have, you know, stayed healthy against Baltimore.
It makes a big difference.
But I think it makes a big difference, that little bit of rest to get you in. You don't want the too much. I think you saw it a little bit with Kansas City against Houston, where there was a mixture of rust versus rest.
Yeah, but that's
but,
I mean,
it, but that, to me, it, to me, the rest I think matters more.
Those guys had also been sitting for like a month.
Yeah, that was aggressive.
And I also think too, when you have that one seed, you're playing a lesser team in the first game. Like, you know, obviously
the lowest ranked team in the divisional round.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, Houston was still a good team, but you take Houston over Baltimore, And especially if there's an upset in the first round too, you take that team over whoever they beat, right? Like,
yeah,
it does provide its advantages, and home field is certainly one of them. But like you said, they lost two playoff games in a row at home after you wanted them at home. They
buck so many trends tough. Though, where it's so frustrating. I know Derek Kramer brings up this a lot on Saturdays, and the few times me and him have been able to host together as well. Just they do take a lot of the fun out of football, especially when your team is good, because it's just you're like get him at home, we got him. Yeah, mm-hmm. You lost at home.
Yeah,
you know, get him this year. Their offense doesn't look that great. Well, they were hiding a lot of stuff, and they just pulled it all out of their hat in the playoffs, and now you're dealing with a team that looks, you know, back to what Kansas City looks like. I mean, I think they are favored against Philadelphia, and Philadelphia on paper, I'd say, is a much better roster than them. I think that might be the best roster in football. It's just, I think they're going to get them maybe once or twice here by the end. It almost feels like at a certain point, you get the one seed to just hope to maybe avoid them. Kind of do what Kansas City did this year, where, well, one of Baltimore and Buffalo is going to take each other out. We'll pick up the scraps kind of deal. We'll let them duke it out, and we'll pick up the scraps. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it became that, where just the Bills were just emotionally shot by the end of it. But that also is something to the one seed, especially in the AFC. You don't have to deal with Baltimore or Kansas City or maybe Cincinnati until at the latest the AFC Championship game, because there's a really good chance they're not going to be the 5 or the 6 or the 7 seed. And even if they are, you're kind of sitting there going, all right, we probably should be able to get them. We should probably be able to beat them here. And I think that's where it comes into it. You get to avoid the top teams until the end, plus you get a little bit of rest, and you're at home. I think there's a lot to it. The 1 seed is somewhat, you know, quote-unquote overpowered now, especially because the 2 seed doesn't get the bye anymore. But it is what it is. You've been able to beat Kansas City in the regular season every year for the last 4 years. and you still haven't been able to get that one seed. I think that's got to be something the Bills have to, and it has been something that they're looking at a lot, but it's got to be something they get here at some point in this run. 803-0550, the number two call. Going to take a quick timeout here. One final segment here before we get you to Sabres Live. We'll do that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we wrap up our day here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We, of course, have been getting connected to our fans all day, and that's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Sabres are back from their Western road trip, back to regularly scheduled programming. 7 o'clock tonight at home against Boston, 6 p.m. pregame. Nicholas Aubé-Cabell. Yesterday, Josh was placed on waivers. Didn't even realize he played 19 games this year. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah, he did.
I thought it was way less
off season, and you know, it's kind of one of those moves. I guess I don't really know why it's a move, but could mean that Greenway's coming back. There hasn't been anything too much on that yet. I think Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff said yesterday, I think, that he's getting close, but he wasn't at practice today for the optional skate. So who knows? I mean, it could be just trying to make a roster spot for when
Elias
Greenway comes
Pettersson
back.
There we go.
I didn't want to say it, but
I'll say it because it won't happen. You know how I feel. You know how I feel.
If they can make that trade happen, man,
I wish they would. I don't think they will. That's my problem.
From everything that a lot of, you know, the insiders and everything have been saying, like specifically like Elliot Friedman, they're not flat out saying that the Sabres are the front runner, but they're kind of suggesting that. I did read one thing from Darren Dreger that the Sabres have been in on this since day one, which
I hope so.
Cool, but I need you to be the winner on day whatever.
Yeah, because if I lose my mind of like, we were making calls, you know, we were right there. You know, we were unwilling to give up, you know, this whatever prospect.
The last time I checked, phone calls didn't win hockey games. So out there and trade for the best available center in the league. And also pair him up with Rasmus Dahlin. The two of them are like not best friends or anything, but they had a lot of incredible plays together on Team Sweden.
Great chemistry.
They have great chemistry. Having those two along with Tage Thompson on a power play, you don't even need the other two guys on the ice. Those three alone would score you all your goals.
Those three alone would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for me and Joshua back on tomorrow for another 10 to 12 Extra Point Show. But coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. For more on the Sabres, they are again back in action tonight, 7 p.m. against Boston, 6 p.m. pregame, both right here on WGR. And this is WGR.